Welcome to the 33rd episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast, where we discuss Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition. Joining us tonight, Layla Fridge Gargoyle Miranova.
Hello.
Jordan Bloody Sunboy Steelman.
Hey yo.
And we are also joined by another special guest, David Music Tech Geet Schwartz.
Hey there.
And I am Jesse Gitzman Burke. So how's everybody doing tonight?
Great.
I'm more than great at the moment.
More than great?
I'm a little more than great.
How are you? I mean, your glass of wine is at least 2 sips in.
I think I've had at least 4 sips.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's showing.
I wish I could say I had some wine over here.
That's all it takes, apparently.
The only kind of wine I have is the kind with an H in it.
Yes.
Wah, wah.
Do you at least have some cheese with your wine?
No, and I sure wish I did.
Should we plug your cheese blog?
We can. That thing's so abandoned at this point. I haven't blogged in a while.
If you're curious about exciting cheese writing, or writing inspired by cheese.
It is really writing inspired by cheese. It is not really about the cheese.
Seriously.
Huh. Yeah.
Well, there's nothing wrong with cheese.
If one were interested to visit said blog, where would they go?
They would go, I don't even remember the...
It's mocheeseplease.com.
It's mocheeseplease.wordpress.com.
Oh. I'm going to have to check that out.
Check it out. You're going to get some hits.
It's like personal essays based upon
inspiration.
Certain cheeses.
Yeah, personal essays based on inspiration from cheese.
Yeah, and my friend actually, she just recently came back from Holland, and she brought me a cheese from Holland, and so I'm trying to write about that, but I have not published that out yet.
And
Coming soon.
And listeners may be wondering what this cheese blog has to do with Warhammer.
Absolutely nothing.
Everything. It has to do with the gift package that Lester, who has been absent from the podcast for several episodes now because he's mysteriously moving, in air quotes. He's somewhere...
He sure has been moving for a long time.
I think he's moving on foot. Yeah. I mean, I have not seen him in a while. We did make email communication about a week ago, and he says he's still moving and getting
set up. Maybe there's a certain way that Canadians have to move.
It's by dog sled.
Yeah, I think so.
No. It's by moose, and you know how stubborn they are.
There must be some maple syrup slowing them down.
I would think that would help ease the...
Well, it's like gooey, you know, it's like sticky.
Yeah.
It depends on what temperature you get it at.
It's that real molasses.
Or trying to get all of the furniture on the dog sled.
That's right.
Must be tough.
Yeah. That's
Well, the Lester...
His facial hair, too, I'm sure, weighs him down.
We love you, Lester. We can't wait till you come back. But to kind of kick it off, there's not a lot of news that's happened from Fantasy Flight over the last few weeks, but some news on a more personal and podcast level. A package showed up at my door last week, and I opened it up, and lo and behold, it was from Lester, and he sent us a gift box, and I thought we'd open some of it on the show because some of it's just fun and it's good old fashioned Canadian stuff, and while we imbibe and eat the things that he sent us, we will we'll go through today's show. So today's show is going to include kind of a continuation off of last episode's Who Am I? Concept, and we are going to talk about Where Am I Going? And Layla, do you want to tell us a little bit about what we're going to do with this story?
We're going to discuss the process of decision-making as a character, as well as the mechanics of Warhammer 3rd Edition and how they reward you for making certain decisions in your career.
So you're kind of talking like how they plan ahead. Like, do you make decisions based on what you want to accomplish in the future versus what your immediate goals are, or
wing
it?
How close to character do you stay when making your decisions? Do you make them because you think they'd be fun as a player, or do you actually have some planning involved when you make your decision?
Like, I want to be some kind of melee warrior class profession in my near future, therefore I need to accomplish the following tasks
right.
in order to get there, or is it character driven? So kind of, are you playing the rules or are you playing your character?
Right.
Cool. Well, before we get kicked into that and the rest of the news, let's start off with the first and what I think is the most exciting part of Lester's care package, which is Lester's beautiful note. And Lester, I won't embarrass you by reading it, even though it was really touching and I thought it was amazingly written. I'd like to just comment on Lester's penmanship.
Oh, yes, it's actually quite good.
I mean, it's beautiful.
It is beautiful. We're wondering if your girlfriend did it, actually.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Either that or Lester is actually a bearded woman.
I actually think Lester might have done it, but we can wait to see what he says.
And very straight. You notice the letters are very straight.
I want Lester,
and large letters.
I want Lester to write everything for me from now on.
Yeah. Is it possible that the person that wrote that is wasn't wearing glasses and had to write in such a large font?
I mean, it's very round and large and beautifully proportioned.
It is proportioned very well.
I mean, I only bring it up because it's that impressive.
It is.
But anyway, let's kick it off then with our first thing to eat here, which is the Coffee Crisp from Nestle. Two bar pack with a big thing that says Eat Me on it. So while I open this and get us started, let's talk about Buried But Not Forgotten coming up tomorrow.
Yes.
We had a little bit of a hiatus there, haven't we?
Yeah, it's been
Did I pronounce that right?
A hiatus, yes.
I'm not even sure how that's spelled.
Hiatus?
It's H-I-A-T-U-S, hiatus.
It sounds like a more
complicated
word.
I never got to win the spelling bee when I was a kid. And
would you have?
I wanted to. The word I lost on was enamel.
Like the teeth enamel?
Yeah, enamel, yeah.
Not an animal?
And I spelled it correctly, but I lost, so I guess I didn't spell it correctly.
And Dave, you won't be partaking in this, right, because it has the peanuts?
No, that one's
No,
fine.
He can eat that one.
Oh, you can eat this one. Let me break into a third piece then.
Okay.
Okay, and then you also, but speaking of peanuts, you say peanut butter does not exist in England?
I don't know if it whether it exists there or not, I just know that the peanut butter and jelly sandwich is not eaten as commonly there as it is here, if at all.
I hope we have at least one British listener who is willing to comment on this.
Yeah, that would be nice.
There's a lot of just kind of strange, you know, cultural differences that you wouldn't even know, that you wouldn't even think to kind of inquire mm-hmm. about, or that would be different, but one of the things, and I don't know how universal it is in Europe, but I know in a lot of, especially Western European countries, if you're at a restaurant and you order water, they will assume that you're talking about sparkling water, and so they will bring you
mm-hmm.
sparkling water, unless you ask specifically for tap water.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very similar in a lot of South American countries as well. Isn't that predominantly because the tap water is often less acceptable? Mm-hmm. I know in South American countries that's more common. I don't know if that applies necessarily to most of Europe.
Right.
For the same concept, I don't know.
Could be.
If anything, we at Reckless Dice appreciate expanding our cultural horizons.
That's true.
So if anybody would like to correct us or give us the reasons why, we'd love it.
Well, Warhammer's based on historical Europe, right? So
that's right. I mean, I would imagine some dwarves. If you were to have some dwarves who were taken away from their carracks and they really wanted to brew but weren't allowed to, and they were brought over to maybe Bretonnia or locked away in some cellar where the manor lord didn't appreciate the beer and he was forced to make bubbling water instead, that would be a great character.
Did they have peanut butter in Warhammer?
No, absolutely not. Wasn't it conceived by the British?
I've never been to a tavern.
Maybe Helga's going to invent peanut butter.
Goat butter?
Goat butter, no. As we've discussed multiple times, Rob is a male.
Which begs to ask, where did the cheese come from?
We're going to leave that on it.
We'll leave that on right there. So Buried But Not Forgotten, for those of you who don't recall or are new to it, is a game series run, GM'd by Michael Wilson. We have recorded now, I believe, 6 episodes of that game, and tomorrow we'll be recording the following 2 episodes, and I believe we're getting into it. Like, I think at noon tomorrow we're heading over there, and we're going to get probably a good 5 to 6 hours of gaming in, so it should be. We've been off that one now for the better part of 2 months.
I think so. Yep.
Yeah, I think birthdays and scheduling conflicts just kind of pushed that one back for quite a ways.
Yeah.
So I think everybody's excited to get that one back in play.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, look forward to that over the weekend. What do we think of the coffee crisps?
Oh, I think it's delicious.
Yeah, I was surprised. It was really good.
It's one of those wafery, chocolatey covered coffee scented.
In fact, if you're not going to eat this, I'm going to just
go ahead. I mean, the Canadians did one more thing right.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a good list going.
Are we going to try the Beaver Buzz?
You mean the energy drink with the beaver on it? We will try that later. It's called the Damn Good Green Tea Beaver Buzz Energy Drink.
Nyuk, nyuk.
Oh, I like what you did there. It took me a minute. Okay.
The Beaver Buzz?
No, the nyuk.
What?
I don't remember. Where are we going? Where am I going?
Just what happens when you drink wine.
I mean, we're kind of celebrating. It's the 33rd episode. We didn't celebrate the 31st episode, which happened to record on my birthday, which was my 31st birthday. So.
Oh, really?
We didn't. I forgot to put all that together until afterwards. No. So no, I figured the 33rd we will celebrate as just for the sake of it being. It was on May 8th, I think.
Well, this just means that on your 33rd birthday, we can't celebrate anything.
Well, damn right. No, it's over. We'll have to shut the podcast down that day. So where am I going? Let's kick it off into some actual Warhammer talk. When you're playing a game, a lot of the decisions you're making, of course, are based on the game you're in and the situations you're in. But a lot of the other factors that go into the decisions you make in combat and storyline and dialogue, who you befriend, who you don't befriend, are also driven by a myriad of other factors, some of which are rules-driven. Some are relationship driven, and the idea of this section is to talk about what those factors are and why players may go down different routes, and maybe decide on different kind of play styles. So, Jordan, maybe do you want to kick us off maybe a little bit with from a player's perspective, where mm-hmm. do you find you most often are left when you're forced to make a decision from a story perspective? So You're given a quest. You're asked to make a decision that might change your character's relationships. Where do you find yourself most often falling back to on the foundation of where those decisions are made?
These days I'm probably I tend to be much more kind of a in the moment type of a person, and so I like to make decisions for my character based on at that particular moment, what I think as a player, my character's reaction would be, what his kind of natural instincts would kind of drive him towards. But I hesitate to kind of make that sound really black and white, because one of the, there's two different kind of thought processes that that players tend to fall into when they're making, character decisions, and there's making the decision from a point of view that this is a story, and I want my character to behave in a way that is feels, how would you say, like natural to the character that that I've established up to this point. But then there's also kind of, making decisions from the point of you're playing a game, and more importantly for RPGs is, you're playing a game with other people. And so this is, you don't want to kind of make a decision if it's going to make, if it's going to really put someone else's, character down, or if it's really going to take away the fun from a situation or something. I think there needs to be a balance. So while I try to really make decisions from my character's point of view, I really try to stay in character from a decision-making standpoint. I also let a little bit of my, of me as the player step in and say, well, obviously I'm not going to do something like, stab another character in the back just because, I can argue that that's the way my character might react in that situation. If it's not good.
It sounds a little bit like you take what the moment kind of dictates, but also you take an element of what's good for the game.
Yeah, do you think
that maybe comes from your experience as being a GM several times and always wanting the game just to kind of feel successful and flow well?
Maybe partially, because of course. Well, honestly, I've been on both sides of the screen when there have been, PC to PC conflict that ends up boiling out into player to player conflict. I'm sure everybody's experienced that at some point. you know, where, and usually that argument devolves into, you know, that's what my character would do, right? That's the excuse that everybody uses. Well, that's, you know, that's what my character would do, so stop trying to tell me how to role play my character. And honestly, I think there's, you can stem that, or you can stop that before it happens, by don't play a character who would do that kind of thing, you know. Not to put too harsh words on it, basically, you know, don't be a prick. You know, play somebody who actually wants to be, you know, a part of a group if you're playing in that, you know, style of a game. You know, you don't have a party full of Wolverines, you know, that sort of thing. But, so, I think if you play a character, that helps you role play a character, what do you call it, naturally or genuinely, if you if your character is actually kind of, you know, created from the standpoint that he's he actually wants to be around these other characters, you know, that he actually sees them as companions, that he sees them as, you know, people that he should be getting along with. So
what,
yeah.
What about when you guys? I mean, do Layla or Dave, let's maybe Dave you first, do you have any preconceived notions of how you play your character, or have you ever even thought about how you play your character from that kind of perspective?
No, I do it the same way, like with Jordan. It's more, see, I came this at a different way. Role-playing, like Warhammer or Dungeons & Dragons stuff, came later for me. I didn't start when, like, I was in college and been always doing role-playing. I started doing all my role-playing via computer games, so I'm always the only person. So I never think past that point of moving my character from place to place and then making a decision when I hit the, like, fork in the road or something. I don't think about even if you're able to take your character and even grow the character in something like World of Warcraft or some other sort of MMO, I'm still playing in the moment at the time. I still somehow think further beyond that. So when I started playing like Warhammer, like about a year ago,
and just for the listeners' benefit, Dave, you play Thorin, who is
correct.
The dwarf in pretty much all of our homegrown games.
With the one arm.
The one with the one arm.
The one with the one arm. That's
and the mangled eye.
That's
and
right.
The mangled eye.
And no armor because he lost it in the quick.
The one who fell down the well.
Yep.
Yes.
And the one who leapt out of the water like a dolphin.
That's me.
He's a very accomplished dwarf.
He is the fan favorite at the moment.
We should see if anybody has questions for him.
Yeah, if anybody would like to talk to Dave and has any questions about Thorin and his
post it on Twitter.
Mishaps.
Can you do a live thing on Twitter?
We will live tweet this episode, sure. All right, you guys keep going. I'll get it up.
So when it came to actually doing role-playing, I think I'm still playing it the same way. I still think of it from that same perspective that, like, within Warhammer, the one nice thing, like, in Warhammer is that you can actually, your character can grow through careers. And it's not something that's prevalent in other role-playing games that I've played. And I play two others at the moment. And, partly so that I can get a chance to see what other ones are like, and then I have something to compare it to. But in Warhammer, you can not only make decisions for the character as he moves through the game and for the benefit of the party, but also there's a career element in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something that comes naturally to me to think about because, one, that's something that's kind of unique to Warhammer, and two, just from my experiences of playing role-playing in a computer format, I think I still play the role-playing, or, you know, Warhammer role-playing in that same manner.
So what dictates your decisions? For instance, I feel like you made a pretty questionable decision on one of our sessions. I forget if it was...
The finale of Horror of Hugaldal.
Yeah, the finale of Horror of Hugaldal, where we had one beast left. We had pretty much cleared all of the bad guys, And there were
minor spoiler alerts.
Yeah, we had cleared most of the bad guys, and there was one mega beast left, and it's just booking out, like trying to get away.
It was like the big gorilla one.
Yeah,
it was like we were beat up, like we were all about to fall over dead.
Yeah.
if a stiff breeze blew through.
Exactly.
And the gorilla comes out.
And so Thorin, Dave's character, is faced with a decision: do I step in front of the beast and slay him? Or do I let him go and just move on from the situation? Thorin decides...
Wait, hold on. Before, I think you explained that slightly wrong, because the beast started to charge us, and all we had to do was step aside, like a raging bull would, and it would just run right past
right.
us, and it looked like it was trying to escape.
That's what I'm saying.
But through us.
Yeah.
And then Dave basically decided...
Well, at that point, in Helga's head, and also in mine, I thought to myself, step aside, Dave. Let it go.
I mean, Dave was literally at his maximum capacity for wounds.
Yes.
And I think he was also at his maximum capacity for critical wounds.
Yes.
Which means if something looked at him funny, he would have died. Like, he's been so close to death so many times.
But Thorin decided to step in front of the beast and confront it. So my question is, why? Why did you decide to do that?
It made for a cool moment, right?
Yeah, it made for a cool moment. It was challenging. I wanted to take on the beast.
I don't remember what happened with that encounter.
Well, what happened is Dave initiated the combat then, and we all then felt compelled to save him, so we all jumped back in. We were all ready to run, too, because we were all just as dead.
Right.
And I remember Conrad was one wound away from dying as well. I mean, he had enough critical wounds, and one good hit would have put him over. And we were all forced then to try and defeat the beast in effectively, I think, 1 or 1.5 rounds of combat. I think Dave was fortunate enough. I think the first hit missed him, which allowed us enough time to actually take it down.
But. Yeah, Dave seems to be real lucky with the dice, I feel like, because if Helga had been in his position, she would have been just, like,
I think Thorin has
blasted.
A death wish, is what it is.
I mean, I'm wondering in Thorin's past what's happened that actually caused him to have this death wish. I don't think he's fully thought it through yet, but I think somebody should ask him next time.
That's a good question.
That's a good question.
I feel
I'll check with Thorin and get back to you on that one.
Would you ask him for it?
Yeah,
but I mean, no, really. I mean, so do you think kind of I mean, I know you seem to approach it a lot from a mechanics or video game perspective, where you have a set of rules that you follow, and less of the story perspective. How do you handle those kind of questions? Like, okay, there's monster coming at you. What does Thorin do? What was your decision making process there to decide to enter that combat versus something else? Or was there one?
I don't know if there was one, particularly at that time. I think at other times, though, that when decisions are being made or we're moving through the module and stuff, or the adventure, I do think of the other players or the rest of the party, so that what moves or decisions I make are not going to jeopardize them. But sometimes you can, it's easy to forget and start thinking first person again and forgetting about the party.
Because, I mean, I don't think Chris would have had any problem killing you.
Probably not.
In fact, he wanted to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, DM.
Yeah, you were scheduled to die there.
He was disappointed that he couldn't kill you off, actually.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I mean, when I said scheduled to die, I mean, you signed your death warrant by standing in front of it.
He rolled the dice on his end and was like, ah.
I mean, that would have been our first actual death, even though you almost died several times. It really just kind of was interesting from our perspective, because it seemed like something so different from what we thought you would do. But it really just brought up the point of, okay, well, how do you play your character?
See, in Helga's mind, there would have been no reason to step in front of that beast, because Helga would like to preserve herself so that she could learn to be a witch and essentially keep living and prolong her career. So that's why to her, it just made no sense. Like, why is he stepping in front of the beast?
And well, not only that, it was putting the rest of us in peril at that point.
Well, sure, because we get sucked into these adventures despite our better judgment, or at least Helga's better judgment.
Well, that's why we renamed everybody the Unwitting Servants of Justice.
Yeah. But so I was really curious to, like, you know, to know what Dave's thought was behind stepping in front of this creature, because I guess Helga doesn't play from the perspective of just wanting a cool story or a cool thing to happen in the game.
Right.
You know?
I mean, you, if anybody, are probably the best and the worst part of most role-playing games because you seem to play your character very true to form, but that doesn't always translate into good game
games,
mechanics.
Right.
But it does ultimately work really well from a role-playing perspective.
Right.
You know, when it's like, hey, I want you guys to go into this swamp and go search for stuff. And you're like, nah, I don't want to get dirty. And it's like, give me some motivation to get dirty. I'm like, okay, well, now I got to come up with that too. And I'm sure the argument could be made that as a GM, I should come up with something more compelling to get you into the dungeon or the swamp or whatever it is.
There's only so much you can do against Helga's stubbornness.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, well, there's another kind of approach too, and honestly, I think it should work both ways. Obviously, the game master should be trying to come up with, you know, interest and compelling reasons and drama and stuff like that to get the characters, you know, interested in what's going on and get them to want to move forward. But at the same time, a friend of mine, and I very much agree with a lot of his sentiments on the topic, especially on the topic of, you know, of thinking as a player versus thinking as a character, you know, in this whole, you know, we recently had a conversation about, actually several involved conversations about, you know, character death and, like, you know, how some people are really, really vehemently opposed to the idea that their character could die, you know, where other people are just totally fine with it. In fact, they kind of expect that their characters might die, you know, at any given point. And talking about character investment and all this sort of thing. But anyway, where I was going with that is that one of the discussions we had was that you as a player also have the responsibility. In fact, you have a significant responsibility because the GM's already doing so much that you have to put yourself, your character, and you as the player into the story, into the game. You have to come up with the motivation. You have to give your character an excuse for why they're doing the things that they're doing or why they're following the party. Why do they go into the swamp? Well, create a motivation. Give yourself some motivation. And if it's not there, you know, maybe there's certainly going to be situations where, you know, you genuinely can't think of any excuse why your character would be doing something. And at that point, you know, you kind of can talk to the GM and say, okay, well, why am I doing this? And what, you know, help me flesh this out a little bit. But I don't, yeah, so I think that it's really on both sides of it. You as the player need to take control of your character as well and say, you know, well, sometimes you play the Dave way and you say, well, I'm going to throw myself in this situation because, damn it, it sounds like it's going to be fun. And I've certainly done that. I'm kind of guilty of at times being the guy who, you know, the rest of the party is kind of sitting around laying plans, and they've sat around for 20 minutes laying plans, and my character's bored to tears, and he just goes and he kicks open a door just to make something happen.
Yeah, I find myself doing that sometimes.
Just because I like excitement. I want something exciting to happen, and planning is okay. But if, you know, the planning gets to the point of tedium, of boredom, then I'm like, all right, guys, come on, let's do something. Let's stop talking about what we're going to do, and let's start doing it. You know, so
I find myself doing, I think, also a mix of what you guys have described here, which is, I find myself, I'm GMing a lot of the games I end up playing. So when I play a player, I tend to have in the back of my mind always knowing this is a short-lived character, or I'm rarely going to get to use them, so I play them a little more recklessly, or perhaps knowing that they're a little more short-lived, or maybe going to die soon, or maybe just caring less about what their ultimate long-term experience is. So I think I just kind of let it play in the moment, where I have a very vague conception of what their long-term goals are, and really just react and allow the story to unfold their story as it happens.
Right, right.
I may not even have preconceived notions of what some of their personality traits are until the story gives me an opportunity to make one.
Yeah, and that was kind of linked to the discussion that my friend and I were having, talking about character mortality and character attachment and that sort of thing. And, you know, we even talked about people who actually kind of get emotionally caught up. You know, when a character dies, they actually feel an emotional reaction to it. Sometimes it's a pretty, you know, a pretty significant one. And I'm not gonna bash on that, but what I will say is that it's, you can be interested in a character and invested in a character from the point of view that you like playing them and you enjoy yourself while you're playing them, and maybe, you know, you can actually connect from a role-playing point of view, aka you can make decisions from the character's perspective without being emotionally attached, I guess, without having kind of that fear of death. Like, yeah, that's kind of one of the things I try not to do. I try not to... I don't play my characters stupidly. unless, of course, they're a stupid character. but
you mean like Stone Paunch got... What's his name? Stone Paunch. My ogre that we're trying to make.
Oh, yeah. Gut Bomb.
Stone Paunch got... Gut Bomb?
I think it was Gut Bomb, wasn't it?
I remember Stone Paunch. I don't remember the other part.
He's a...
I'm trying to incorporate an ogre into our...
He's not dumb, though. He's an investigator.
He is, though. I'll talk about Stone Paunch a little bit later. I'm really excited to get some feedback on him.
I think that I get somewhat attached to the character, like when I've been near death.
Like, how attached are you to Thorin?
Yeah, I mean what are you going to do?
We have no concept of what you think about Thorin.
Well, I've looked at it two ways. At some point where I don't want him to die, I want to keep going.
Right.
Because you invested the time with the character.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, though, if I'm not enjoying the character, I almost look forward to it so that I can start a new character.
Okay? Sure.
Mm-hmm. Because that would be the opportunity to do something as opposed to simply... Because we're going to... party that's continuing, basically. We're living together or moving on through our adventures together.
Right.
It's different if you're playing a module campaign for an evening, and then that's the end of the thing, and then the next week you pick up and it's something completely different, and you're not really doing a campaign. You're just doing evening one-offs.
Right.
Okay, and so, and then each week you might pick a different character to play with.
So what do you...
Do you like Thorin?
Yeah, to put you on the spot.
Well, dwarves, I've always been attracted to dwarves.
Well, right, you have
a Warhammer tabletop, and I play dwarves there as well.
What are your feelings towards Thorin?
Yeah, tell us. Yeah.
Like, if you were to die in the next session, what would you be sad?
No.
I mean, do you like Thorin? Are you ready to retire him? Is it just kind of...
I enjoy the character. I guess I don't get attached that way that it becomes something like a loss. Like if my puppy died, you know, that would be a real attachment. I don't find that I have that kind of attachment with the character, even though I've invested a lot of time with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I haven't done that yet in role playing.
To me, it would be really tragic because I've drawn a picture of you and your lost limb.
I think we're more attached to Thorin than you are.
You're right.
I'm attached to Thorin's accomplishments.
Yeah,
because it's been he's been the source of so many ridiculous stories that given how muted you are at times or how unanimated you are sometimes with him and how ridiculously successful he has been in surviving things that by no means he should have, has created this just thing where I...
Right, I mean, he does become a character in the story without me even trying to make him a character.
Yeah.
Right.
He's developed a personality.
I think he has a personality of actions as opposed to of voice, and
that's very true.
You know that he's never going to jump into conversation and be the star, but he will every once in a while. Every once in a while, though, his actions will create stories for him,
like diving into the well.
It's just
correct, and I think that perspective, that the character is enjoyable for that way, and it makes for a fun story. And we certainly get a lot of fun poking fun of it.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. He's a riot.
Which wouldn't happen if I played it straight and maybe was more vocal, the character. And again, that's none of it's pre-planned except at the moment.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, and I have a sense of humor where I like to do kind of goofy things. So I think that kind of might be where I'll take that risk at that moment and just see what the heck happens and then see where it goes from there.
Right. So let me interrupt for a moment, Jordan. Does anybody play with an ultimate goal in mind? And I kind of am thinking more in the line of fulfilling story or career goals, or even quest goals, anything like that. Do you guys make decisions based on those? And to what level do those affect your regular decision making versus your do you just kind of try and leave it up to the GM to allow your quest to ultimately reach a success if you just kind of stay alive, or do you?
I think Helga's playing with an ultimate goal in mind. I mean, at the beginning, she kind of wasn't, but now that I've kind of latched onto the, that's the amber with it?
Like kind of the life and forest magic.
So now that she's kind of, like, found some interest in the amber wizards and the hedge magic and, you know, she's got a mutated goat that she wants to save. I do play her with the idea of keeping her alive. So I will not take the risks that perhaps Dave's characters...
Not at this point. I feel you're very invested in how...
At this point. It's funny because a couple of episodes ago, I was fully ready to get rid of her. I was just like, I'm done with her. Let's just kill her off.
The problem is, though, you know, realize that if you die... Rob has to go to a foster home, and I don't think you really want it, or an orphanage, and that would be just terrible.
What I'm seeing is Rob going to another goat farm, somebody purchasing him, and he becomes Alpha Goat, and then he starts corrupting all the other goats.
He would be Alpha Goat.
And later on, the rest of the group will have a quest to go and slay them.
Yeah, so I mean, I do...
Warhammer.
Yeah,
that's mutant goats.
I do play with a self-preservationist mentality, and I do get really upset as the player when my character gets hurt in any way, because I'm just like, no, she's going to die.
I never thought I would feel that way, but playing Conrad in the Horrid Hugeldahl episode, when we got to the finale and all of us almost died, like there was a point where we were legitimately all about to die.
Yeah.
We realized very quickly we were in way over our head, and Chris was not going to let up. He was just going to say, "Well, this is what you guys as a group got yourself into, and this is just going to happen now.
Right.
So yeah. You guys deal with it."
He would have killed us off.
And we dealt with it, and we had a couple moments where it eventually turned into our favor. Too. But it was very. I was legitimately like, I'm not quite sure when I'm just going to turn tail and leave the rest of you guys behind and start running.
You were thinking of fleeing?
I was.
You would have left Helga behind?
I was not far off from that. I was actually really, I did not want my character to die. I was really like, I can't let this happen. I can't. Yeah. I couldn't in good faith let it happen.
No, I thought it was interesting with Helga or with Layla playing Warhammer and not having a background in the Warhammer universe. Was really kind of cool because you went in kind of blind.
Mm-hmm.
Where I had played Warhammer Online, the MMO, I played the tabletop,
mm-hmm.
I played the single player. What's the one, the Warrior of the March one? That's the RTS?
Mark of Chaos.
Mark of Chaos, and that's a real time strategy game. So I have some background to it, and so I think about that a little bit. And wanting to kind of keep within that, but it's interesting how well you've worked in with the rest of the characters, having absolutely no lore background.
And now you've read almost every book.
Right, I have now.
I mean, you probably know just as much as the rest of us now, depending on how much you
probably
remember.
More so.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you're a fast reader. The rest of us look at words and go, huh?
I've gotten quite a bit of dwarf history down that I would like to make some use of. So
Dave, you just bought the dwarf module as well.
Yes, so I now have the Book of Grudges with all of the advanced details and stuff.
Yeah.
So I have some more reading.
You can read about Stonebred and the beards and the beard braiding techniques.
That's right.
So what about career planning? I mean, you're out of high school. You're getting ready to go to college. There. You sit down with your counselor. My analogy falls apart right there.
Your mutated counselor of chaos.
Well, that's kind of the thing that's unique to Warhammer is that you have that mechanic. A lot of other role-playing games, that's not a mechanic.
Right.
And if you're a druid or whatever, and you play that character till you max out in level, you don't change career's perspective. You gain new armor or new skills, but that's it. Here you can go, well, like with
Bearden.
Nate's character.
Bearden.
Oh, Bearden, yeah.
Yeah, he's actually thinking in terms of career. He wants to move into engineer as the next path. I've kind of thought about that, like it started out as a soldier, so moving into as an iron breaker, but I haven't thought to detail how that person actually transforms into that character.
Right, you've just kind of approached it from a mechanics gaming perspective, but here's an upgrade to my warrior class.
Correct.
Or, I mean, Jordan, you've been playing a while. What's your longest running character?
Well, ironically, I haven't played a Warhammer. I've GM'd a lot of Warhammer, but I haven't played a lot of Warhammer.
Uh-huh.
So my character has sadly not made it out of first career. But
no way.
Yeah.
It's the sad story of every GM.
Yeah, exactly.
Every GM sits there and has a character pre-made in a box waiting to play, and it never makes it out.
Right. Or four, or six.
Yeah. Oh, I've made dozens. I have them in my boxes, too.
You know,
Conrad, that's what I'm so excited with Conrad.
That stack of character sheets that'll never see the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
But not just from Warhammer, but even just talking generally about other role-playing games. I mean, like Dave was saying, it's most role-playing games, it's kind of, you know, you pick something and that's it. That's what you are. And that's kind of like, you know, like I said, you might kind of get better at some stuff. You might gain some new stuff. But generally, your character, you know, who he is doesn't really fundamentally change all that much.
Can I interrupt for a moment? We've all been playing, I think, I'm not sure if you have, Jordan, but we've all been playing Diablo 3. Are you playing that?
No, I don't think my computer could actually run it.
Okay, but the three of us are, and this is, Layla, probably your first experience with a, because you have a level like 40-something monk going now, and this is probably more more of a traditional RPG from a mechanics perspective, where once you pick your class, you're locked into that class for the rest of the game until you're done playing.
Mm-hmm.
There's no switching. There's minor variations once you're in the class, and How do you feel? And that's, how do you feel having been there? Do you get bored with the class? Do you still like the class? Is it how does that approach to a character's rule set differ from, you know, Warhammer to you?
I guess I've been kind of getting bored with her more recently because she's not smashing as hard as she used to in the beginning. But I don't really have any desire to change her because I kind of keep moving along with the hope that she's going to get some really awesome upgrade or talent or really sweet hat that I can put on her. So I don't know. That's what keeps me going.
So you are now a loot whore.
I do. I really play for the loot at this point. Like, every time I loot and I don't find the sword I want or the weapon I want, I'm just like, oh, really?
And, you know, and I'm doing the same thing with this game, but like World of Warcraft, for example, I've been playing almost since the beginning, maybe the second year. And in the beginning, I created several different characters, maybe like half a dozen, and just tried each one out until I found one that fit my personality or style.
For sure.
And then I stuck with that one, and now have him up to 85. But
I mean, that's really
common. There is a character that I'm attached to.
Yeah.
I'm attached to the guild that's been in, even though the people have changed. I got a poster of him when they were offering those, not at BlizzCon, but a company came forward at BlizzCon one year and said that we'll make these. You can go in online and make your own poster and move your character and load it and all that stuff. So now I'm attached to this character because I've invested a lot of time, money, and everything. And but in the Warhammer, is more like, yeah, so far I've been playing it the same type of mechanics where I haven't thought, this is my character and I'm just playing.
So with that in mind, I mean, we brought in the idea that once you're into one career, you're stuck in it with most games, but the difference with Warhammer is that you do get to transfer from career to career to career. Does that go into your decision-making process as you're playing your character? I don't mean necessarily like, okay, well, once I get my 10 experience, I get to do something else. I mean, do you actually play your character with the intent of transitioning your career from one to the next, or setting up seeds that allow that to organically happen, or acquiring the equipment you need to make it happen?
I think that's happened more in the last few months. I've started thinking more in terms of moving him away from being just the soldier type.
Right.
And now that, of course, I finally got a copy of the book, I want to explore what my other opportunities are and now plan that
Well, it seems like some of your stuff was bred out of necessity, because part of becoming an airbreaker means you have to have a set of Gromrel armor, and you don't have one yet. So we've decided, and we've allowed you to kind of enter the Ironbreaker career,
kind of,
but
as an apprentice,
you're going to probably live that career twice, because we're going to make the first one. Your ultimate goal is, before you can leave this career, you need to actually acquire your Gromrel armor, and then you can kind of proceed with it from there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But does anybody else really take that opportunity to do it, to role play your career progression, or is it something that's a little more passive?
Yeah, I really try to. I mean, because I want there to be some kind of a connection. I want there to be a bridge between the careers. I don't want a character to, you know, who was formerly, you know, a rat catcher, and then suddenly, you know, he becomes a wizard's apprentice or something like that. You know, just one day he wakes up and he decides that, you know, I'm going to go visit the Jade Wizards and become one of them. You know, I usually let the where the character is going to end up going be sort of dictated by kind of the early parts of the campaign. That's actually one of the things I really enjoy about campaign play, is setting foot into the campaign, you know, at the beginning, not really knowing where it's going to go. So you could just kind of, you know, roll up this character, and we kind of discussed, you know, maybe you just have kind of a bare bones idea of who the character is, and you let the character kind of evolve and kind of come alive over the course of a few adventures. And then once you've got a better idea for like where the campaign's going, what kind of things it's focusing on, and what kinds of interactions your character has had with, you know, what types of NPCs or what types of guilds has he been involved with, and what is he interested in, has he witnessed, you know, a particular career be really impressive in front of him. You know, did some like road wardens come in and save the day, and now he really, really wants to become a road warden, you know. But I'll kind of let an idea kind of percolate into the character over the course of kind of the early campaign. So maybe by the time I'm halfway through a career, then I'll start thinking, okay, well, that sounds like my character really kind of wants to go into this career next. So I'll start kind of giving the GM some seeds to plant to kind of take it in that direction, and let the GM know that I'm interested in going that way, and we can kind of start building, you know, some backgrounds there. I'll go start talking to the right NPCs and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I probably do it much more, for me, it's probably much more genuine too. Like, what is the character interested in? What has the character been exposed to? As opposed to just kind of a, you know, well, where are the next cool abilities going to come from?
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I think that's been a good discussion on where am I going.
Not
me specifically. Where I'm going is towards Lester's Beaver Buzz energy drink, because I'm really curious to try this, and then I want to get into a couple of questions and answers before we wrap up this episode.
Okay.
If any of the listeners have any questions or have any additional comments on where am I going, we'd love to hear it. You guys can comment on that on the Facebook page under Reckless Dice or recklessdice.com. So with that, Beaver Buzz energy drink while we kick off the questions and answers.
It's damn good, and we're not going to bleep that because that's D-A-M.
As in the structure that the beavers build.
Correct. See, there's no swearing on this podcast.
No, we keep it clean now. We used to be a little dirtier, but we're a
family-oriented Warhammer.
We are. We're family-oriented.
All right. It looks a little bit like urine.
It has that carbonated look to it. With a few bubbles, not overly carbonated.
It's frothy.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Oh, no.
All right, Lester, here's to you. That is not what I thought it would be.
Oh, it's delicious. It's green tea, essentially, with a little bit of fizz.
Oh, that sounds good.
I'm not sure. It's like a very, very potent green tea with a lot of
sugar.
I mean,
I would be fully... I don't like energy drinks at all because they make me super just antsy. And
that does have a lot of extra caffeine.
It does look like an antsy beaver illustrated.
And also they taste super just, I don't, sugary most of the time, but this one's pretty good.
Well, Lester's at two out of five gifts so far, or three out of five gifts with a thumbs up. Does this get a thumbs
what
up?
He had
an outstanding written letter.
Uh-huh.
We haven't done that one yet. We had the coffee crisps. Oh, I'm sorry. There's only four.
There's four.
Okay, so these are two yeses, and we haven't done the fourth one
there's
yet.
There's a soft stuffed beaver
with a red hoodie that has a maple leaf that says "eh" on it, which I've given to my kids, and I've named it Lester. So now, like, I ask the kids who wants to take...
There are strange situations that come up.
I ask the kids who wants to take Lester to bed tonight, and the kids raise their hand. So anyway, I think Lester's batting a 4 for 4 right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
It does appear to be.
So Lester's care package giving skills are fully...
Yes.
If I was going to have anybody send me a care package, it would be Lester.
That would be him. Yeah.
Lester, you have a new business model prepared.
That's right.
Now. Canadian gift packages.
I think the tail on this beaver is my favorite part.
So we're going to kick it off with the Q&A now. So as always, submit your questions to and comments to recklessdice@gmail.com or on Facebook under Reckless Dice or under Twitter under @RecklessDice. Aaron Mokhtar, friend of the show, has a last comment.
He might as well just be on the show at this point.
He probably should be at some point. This has actually been a 3-part question, which we've been whittling away at, and this is the last of the three. He asked us how we like to handle haggling. Some of his previous ones had dealt with, you know, gambling and a few other bits, but haggling is something that's been...
That's a great question, because Helga's going to have some haggling in her future.
Is she?
Isn't she?
I mean, you tell me.
I mean, I think she is.
If she's... I mean, she hasn't haggled in the past.
She hasn't. And she... Her charm has to help her with the haggling.
If she stops trying to tell dwarves to stop drinking beer or something, I mean, it might work. Or she stops trying to, like, flirt with a chaos cultist.
My approach with Helga to haggling would be to do a bunch of charm rolls to see if I can charm whoever I'm trying to haggle with.
That is very much one of your options. Other options, Dave, do you have folklore often could be used, intelligence can be used. It really depends on how you want to haggle. Jordan, do you have any other options on how you'd like to handle haggling?
All the stuff you guys are talking about is good stuff, of course. If it came down to kind of dice rolling, I would, you know, generally be using stuff like charm or intelligence or, you know, intellect or whatever. I'm going to interject just one kind of thought here. I'm going to play a little devil's advocate, or at least just kind of explain, you know, me as a longtime GM and having experienced a great deal of kind of haggling in games. You know, players always kind of want to stretch their pennies, right? You know, they want to get the most bang for their buck, or, you know, somebody's got something they really want, but they just don't have the coin for it, so then they try and, you know, barter, negotiate, or whatever. But sometimes it's even over just general supplies. And when it's over kind of really nitpicky stuff or less important stuff, honestly, I don't like to take very much time with it at all. Usually I just kind of have a simple system where I say, you know, okay, well, this is the bare minimum that the vendor would be willing to sell it for, and, you know, okay, I look at my player characters, you know, how convincing/charming/ you know, manipulative could they potentially be, and then I'll just kind of come up with a number off the top of my head, and I'll say, okay, well, this is what he'll sell it. This is what you can get him for.
You don't roll the dice yourself as the merchant?
Not for the nitpicky stuff. Okay.
No. The only time that I would really break the dice out, and this is because I don't want to get caught up in a lot of the minutia, because I've had the 4-hour game session. It wasn't one that I was running, but I was a player in a game session that was basically 4 hours of people, you know, buying and selling. And
that sounds like so much fun.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not gonna point fingers at D&D, but it was magic item shopping.
I mean, so I don't know. It could be kind of entertaining.
Going shopping.
Yeah. Am I the only one who would enjoy that? I don't even like
shopping.
You hate shopping. I know.
Yeah. So I just kind of gloss over a lot of that stuff. And, I just don't want to take up too much time with it. But if it's really, really important stuff, I mean, I can't really imagine.
What if it's
goods.
A bear?
If it's a what?
A bear.
A bear?
What if you're haggling over a bear?
Well, see, now that would be interesting. Because
not haggling
with
the bear.
Yeah. Over the bear.
Like on top of it?
A sad bear.
Yeah. So kind of trying to understand why they would need a bear and how much they would be willing to pay and why somebody else has a bear for sale. That would be fun. That would be fun.
I have all of this planned because we have secretly concocted a way for...
This was just a way to foreshadow some things to come.
Stop there, then.
Yeah. There will be a bear.
There might be a bear.
And Helga might really want the bear.
And if you can successfully haggle said bear.
And there shall come a reckoning.
Helga wants nothing more than to sit atop the bear and have it carry her to her next adventure.
We basically accidentally instilled... The fact that Helga is from Kislev, and we've accidentally instilled the idea that the Kislevites have, in their past, ridden bears into combat. It must happen now, is basically what
it is, the quest.
Yes, Helga has a new... actions will now be dictated towards achieving bear.
Well, the bear can't possibly be using that little card for the dog.
No, we could give you like a horse mount card or something.
Oh, there is such a thing.
Really for a bear. I don't know what mechanically how to deal with it quite yet.
Well, there's the Amber Wizard spell that they have the bear form.
Oh, is bear form one of them? I'd forgotten.
I thought it was crow, wolf, and bear.
Okay, I'll also pull that card out and check it out.
It's a polar bear. In case anybody wanted to detail.
I mean, if one were to show up, it'd probably be emaciated.
Well, yeah. But it would still be polar. Helga wants a white bear. Let's make it happen for me.
Probably yellow and dirty.
Get out the
I'll give it a bath.
Well, I think the other way to handle the quick and easy way I handle haggling is I like to just do a quick charm check. With the character versus the shopkeeper's, fellowship of three, unless they're really stingy shopkeeper, in case it might be four. And then if they succeed, they get like a 25% discount. If they fail, the shopkeeper gives them a negative 25, or depending on how much they fail by. Chaos Star probably would do that. I just kind of keep it as simple as that. But I like your idea where... Jordan, where if anything is kind of a nitpicky thing, you just kind of give them a set price and move on. Because if anything, I don't like getting hung up in the details.
Yeah. Well, one of the problems, the reason I kind of do that is one of the problems that I always came across whenever haggling came up is that basically what you get is when you roll the dice, if the dice roll doesn't go in the direction that the players want it to go, the person's not willing to barter, or not willing to kind of bargain with them, or, you inflate the price, then the players basically just say, okay, well, we're not going to buy from him, and they'll just move on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kind of would get a little frustrated with that, because it's like, well, okay, we're wasting time making dice rolls that if the dice rolls don't go their way anyway, they're not going to matter. And so the players are just, that's kind of wasted time. And but it was also the result of a bunch of... just kind of like, okay, well, we've got a whole bunch of junk that we want to go to town and we want to sell it, and they're going to try and, of course, again, get as much, money for it as they could possibly can, and if you let them roll dice to do that, well, sure, they're going to roll dice to do that, but that, again, I just kind of say, okay, well, this is the maximum value that they're going to give you for these nasty old goblin daggers, so take it or leave it.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I'm going to move on to our next question here. Glorian comments, "Hoy."
We don't know if that's a typo, but we hope it is.
No, that can't be. That's like a.
Ahoy, hoy.
No, I don't think it's ahoy, hoy. I think it's like a. I think I picture it being Australian or British, like "hoy, mate." Isn't that it?
I want to go with that. Yes.
Okay, we're going to go with that. One quick
Dave
request.
Dave thinks it's a typo.
Really?
Although she does answer.
Cheer.
Okay, he does say there's a cheers. Yeah, yeah. Can you give us a short list of the adventurers, their names, and their career? That would help quite a lot when we hear the episodes one after the next if there is some time in between. Cheers, Glorian. I think that's a great idea, and instead of spending the time on the podcast to go through all of our adventures and who everybody is, I think what we're going to do is incorporate that as part of our introductions for each episode, mm-hmm. and let all the listeners be reminded of who everyone is who's participating in that session, and kind of what their current status is, kind of like the intro credits to a movie or something. And moving on, Aaron Mokhtar hits us up again on the Reckless Dice podcast wall. Hey guys, hope you had a great weekend. I have a question I hope the community can help him with. How do you measure distance on the huge Warhammer map? I don't need an exact measurement, just to know how many days it takes to travel between two different points. Does anybody have any good ideas on how...
That's a good question.
Shouldn't you have those ideas?
I mean, I have some ideas. I'm just wondering if other people have a few other ones they wanted to volunteer first.
Well, I'm really awesome with distance and maps, so...
That's no, don't trick people.
Well, the map did have a feature.
It did back in the day, but let's just pretend that doesn't exist anymore because we can't come back.
Right.
Oh, that doesn't exist anymore on there?
The interactive, like, plotting courses and tells you how long it takes you to get from point A to point B.
I mean, you should just put that back on there.
I mean, it's really that simple.
It obviously is.
There is actually a traveling document floating around. I'm trying to remember where that is. Maybe one of the community members who's listening can remind us and post it on the comments. But there was a traveling document that you could kind of like say, okay, well, I'm in Marienburg and I want to travel to Altdorf, and this is how many miles and days it takes. That was available, and it pretty much had all the major locations traveling to and from to help plot out your course. That's probably your best bet, and if we can find that, I'll put it up on Gitzman's Gallery. I don't think it's there right now. Alternatively, there is the scale map on the big one up in the top right, and you could find out how many miles it is from one point A to point B, and mm-hmm. you know, extrapolate from that it take you travel 3 to 5 miles per hour, depending on your different whether you're walking or horseback or something like that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's a tough question. I'm hoping the community can help us out on that one.
Yeah, there's a couple of places I know from some of the older.
Wait, I'm sorry, I did not read any further than what I should have. Did you just pull up the link?
I did pull up the link. I'm trying to decide if it's related or not.
Yeah, Philip Boujon, who was on our last podcast, the Bretonian, he actually was kind enough to post the link.
The womanizer Bretonian?
That's right, with his wine. He actually posted the link, so we'll share this on the show notes. I should have read one line.
Did he mention he liked tennis, too? Or am I imagining that?
Philip, let us know.
Do you also like long walks along the beach?
And pina coladas.
Isn't he married or with a girlfriend? Don't I have a girlfriend?
Yeah.
I thought so.
It's a simple question.
I mean, innocent enough.
Oh, there's the document.
So we'll post that document on the show notes. Please check that out. It's a very useful resource. We'll also get it up on Gitzman's Gallery. And our last question for tonight from Matthew McLeod. He emails in with a 2.5-parter. What is the link to the Enemy Within campaign that was talked about in episode 0? That would be our pilot episode. That was a long time ago. I have no idea what what we said. I'll have to go back and listen to that. If Paul was on, I bet he would know, because I think he made the comment. Do you recall, Jordan, are there any current links in the existing third edition that tie back to, in the current edition or upcoming one that we know of that tie back to the original Enemy Within campaign?
I don't know. You know, there was a reference to an NPC that was in, I think it was from, what was the first supplement that was released? I can't think of the name of it right now, but there was like a couple of NPCs that Baron Von Saponatime, who was actually referenced in The Enemy Within.
That's right, Von Saponatime.
Yeah. But other than that, I'm drawing a blank. I can't really think of direct kind of correlations with Enemy Within. Of course, actually, the original Enemy Within takes place in a version of the Warhammer universe that's kind of been retconned by Games Workshop a little bit because, I don't want to give any spoilers, but yeah, let's just say that if the old Enemy Within happened the way that the modules say it happened, the Warhammer 3rd Edition several things wouldn't be the way that they are. So.
Oh, interesting. I'm hoping maybe then we can explore that, because I don't know very much about that adventure. And maybe once it's released and once everybody has a chance to kind of digest it a bit, maybe we can start doing the comparisons. I'm hoping that we'll actually run that campaign as soon as it comes out.
There are some things. There's people who know that old first edition Warhammer Fantasy and kind of, you know, the Warhammer tabletop have kind of made comment about how they thought Warhammer Fantasy first edition was sort of kind of like an alternate timeline, because there are definitely some themes and some things that go on in Warhammer in Warhammer roleplay in the early years that were kind of written out by or weren't or were basically ignored by Games Workshop in their establishment, you know, going forward with the tabletop game. So, some pretty significant ones too.
Interesting. I would love to hear what all those are after we have a chance to compare. His second part of his question is, he noticed there was a question of why people felt betrayed with third edition, and he mentions that he felt betrayed because of a lack of supplements that should have been. And he goes on to say the first edition had the dwarf supplement, so it was so he was waiting for an elf one, and especially the halfling one. Halflings currently are very underdeveloped when it comes to cultural content. Second edition had a vampire and a skaven book, but lacked many other awesome supplemental materials that could have been mined, and only a mature line that could have produced those pieces of content or any further ones like that. Such as rules for playing an all Lizardmen campaign, a book on the Dark Elves, and even more surprising, there's no books on Orcs, or any of the Greenskins for that matter. Now with the addition of third edition, he's saying that we'll never see them. In fact, we may never see these books in third edition before they go on to fourth edition, which of course hasn't been mentioned at all. But he's just worried that this edition may be too short-lived for some of those things to actually surface. He's wondering, he's wanting a complete edition of the game with everything throughout being well-formed. And he signs off with a here's to the Lizardmen supplement. Fingers crossed.
Well, that's certainly a letter to Games Workshop, if anything. Games Workshop, even within the battle game, I mean, there's parts of it that are just barely developed. I mean, I think the Greenskins book is one of the least. I mean, they give you lots of units, but it's in terms of background and everything, it's very sparse. Stuff like Lizardmen and Dark Elves and all that's all pretty niche stuff, even for Warhammer.
It is, and geographically, it's so separated from.
Yeah, I mean the odds party would have to do to encounter Lizardmen and Slan and stuff like that is just that just doesn't happen.
I mean, you know, what are the likelihood in this edition of us seeing things like a Dark Elf book, an all orc book, or a Lizardmen book, or an Albion book, the Pirate Isle of Sartosa, Bretonnia, Estalia, Tilia, any of that stuff?
I would say, of course, we don't really know because we haven't had any recent feedback from Fantasy Flight, so we don't really know kind of the direction that they're planning to go after the Enemy Within campaign releases. So it's kind of hard to say at this point, but I think it's safe to say
we can still assume that an elf supplement is on the way. It's got to be a still playable race.
Yeah.
I personally would love to know more about the elves.
Yeah, that's kind of a big hole that yet to be filled for you.
You know, I think that this is a business from their perspective, and so it's numbers that drive what they produce, and so they probably would want to produce everything, but one, you know, we don't know what are the figures for Warhammer role-playing actually doing. Is it, you know, as far as the product itself? And then whereas most of the people seem to be, you know, where are the sales in a lot of their modules and things, feedback they get from customer service, things like that, I would, you know, definitely write to them. I know I've called their customer service phone line. They're very good about taking suggestions. They're really helpful on the phone. They answer emails quickly.
Yeah.
And I think the more feedback they get from people, like in other words, you know, if they get 100 letters from people that all want, you know, Lizardmen or something, maybe that might be something for them to consider. But if they're not getting feedback,
What kind of suggestions have you given them?
Not in this particular game, but for some other games and stuff like that, I've asked them about, and I've asked them about their stores and, you know, some of the other products and stuff.
You know, I think that given this kind of dual product nature that Warhammer 3rd Edition has been taking on, where they tackle two races or two concepts, two, like, polar concepts with within each product, they're kind of having the amount of work that they need to do to cover ground. For better or for worse, you know, as you get less content for each one, but you get more variety as you move on.
And it does take time to write all this stuff. I mean,
oh, sure.
Yeah.
There's a lot of time.
I think Lester has even done some of the freelance writing for some of their other products, some of the 40K stuff. But, I mean, that means that, you know, if we get a High Elf supplement, we might get the Dark Elves as part of that.
Correct.
If we get a Bretonian supplement, we might get the Undead as part of that. If we get... And if we get Wood Elves, we might get Beastmen as part of that. If we get Kislev, we might get who knows what. If we get Lizardmen, we might get Tomb Kings. Sure, I mean, whatever. Actually, aren't they arch nemesis at some point? So there is a lot of those dual-natured supplements or adventure campaigns that target a specific race. So, for example, like the second edition, Lore of the Lich Lord targets Tomb King specifically. That's an opportunity to flush out that race. That kind of stuff can very easily happen. It's just a matter of, like you said, what's going to be popular and what's going to be profitable.
Yeah.
And I think profitable is still probably the end game.
Oh, sure. I mean, they kind of stay in business.
Well, with that, let's wrap it up for this episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next episode. If you enjoy the show, please show your support with a review on iTunes. Until next time, thanks for listening.